Chapter 37 continued with more testimonies. In bearing the testimony which God has given me for the last 15 years, I have been opposed by many who became my bitter enemies, especially those whose errors and sins have been revealed to me and have been exposed by me. Some of these have carried out their feelings of revenge, as might be expected, in attacking the humble instrument and circulating unfavorable reports against me. As these things have troubled some who have had no knowledge of my early experience, my brethren and sisters who have known my experience and labors for the last 10 or 15 years have put into my hands their testimonies for me to use when necessary. These have been a benefit to me the past 2 years, and probably will be in the future. One instance I will mention. At the time of the Cranes Grove, Illinois conference and discussion, several of the age to come No Sabbath preachers designed to bring out before the public some of the reports in circulation. But when they learned we were prepared for them, Elder Stevenson stated to my husband that they had concluded to do nothing about it. I will here give two of these testimonies, also some others which have been sent to me by those who have read the printed sheets of this book. And I would here state to all others who can freely and cheerfully give their names to these testimonies to send them in immediately. Also those who can testify to other facts stated in this book will please send their testimonies with the names of as many as can cheerfully give them. There will be but 400 copies of the last 16 pages of this book printed now. These will be sent out, and when all have sent in their testimonies and names who would esteem it a pleasure, the entire edition will be completed. A special request is made that if any find incorrect statements in this book, they will immediately inform me. The edition will be completed about the 1st of October, therefore send before that time. Note, the following further account of experiences written after the issuance of the first limited printing of Spiritual Gifts, Volume 2, which we have been reading, on September 18, 1860, was included in subsequent editions. It appears here that the reader may have all that was published in all printings. Continuing, September 20, 1860. My fourth child, John Herbert White, was born. When he was 3 weeks old, my husband felt it to be his duty to travel west. About 1 week before he was to visit Mauston, we received letters from MES for publication, purporting to be visions given her of God. As we read these communications, we felt distressed. We knew they were not from the right source, and as my husband knew nothing of what he was about to meet at Mauston, we feared that he would be unprepared to meet the fanaticism, that it would have a discouraging influence upon his mind. We had passed through so many such scenes in our early experience, and had suffered so much from these unruly, untamable spirits, that we have dreaded to be brought in contact with them. I sent in a request for the church at Battle Creek to pray for my husband, and at our family altar we earnestly sought the Lord. With brokenness of spirit and many tears, we tried to fasten our trembling faith upon God's promises, and we had the evidence that God heard us pray, and that he would stand by my husband and impart to him counsel and wisdom. While looking in the Bible for a verse for Willie to commit to memory to repeat in Sabbath school, these words arrested my attention. The Lord is good, a strong hold in the time of trouble, and he knoweth them that trust in him. I could but weep over these words, they seemed so appropriate. The whole burden upon my mind was for my husband and the church in Wisconsin. My husband realized the blessing of God well in Wisconsin. The Lord was to him a stronghold in time of trouble. He sustained him while he bore a decided testimony against the wild fanaticism there and upheld him by his free spirit. I received a letter from my husband written at Mackford, Wisconsin, in which he stated, "I fear all is not well at home. I have had some impressions as to the babe." While praying for the family at home, he had a presentiment that the child was very sick. The babe seemed lying before him with face and head dreadfully swollen. When I received the letter, the babe was well as usual, but the next morning he was taken very sick. It was an extreme case of erysipelas in the face and head. When my husband reached Brother Wick's near Round Grove, Illinois, the telegraphic dispatch stating the sickness of the child was handed him, and as he read, he stated to those present that he was prepared for the news, for the Lord had prepared his mind for it, and that they would hear that the child's head and face were greatly affected. My dear babe was a great sufferer. 24 days and nights we anxiously watched over him, using all the remedies we could for his recovery, and earnestly presenting his case to the Lord. At times I could not control my feelings as I witnessed his sufferings. Much of my time was spent in tears and humble supplication to God, but our Heavenly Father saw fit to remove my lovely babe. December 14 I was called up. My babe was worse. I listened to his labored breathing, felt his pulseless wrist. I knew that he must die. That was an hour of anguish for me. The icy hand of death was already upon him. We watched his feeble, gasping breath until it ceased, and we felt thankful that his sufferings were ended. When my child was dying, I could not weep. I fainted at the funeral. My heart ached as though it would break, yet I could not shed a tear. We were disappointed in not having Brother Loughborough to conduct the funeral services, and my husband spoke upon the occasion to a crowded house. We followed our child to Oak Hill Cemetery, there to rest until the life-giver shall come and break the fetters of the tomb and call him forth immortal. As we returned from the funeral, my home seemed lonely. I felt reconciled to the will of God, yet despondency, gloom, settled upon me. The discouragements brought upon us the past summer we could not rise above. As to the state of God's people, we knew not what we might expect. Satan had controlled the minds of some closely connected with us in the work, even some who had been acquainted with our mission and had seen the fruits of our labors, and have not only witnessed the manifestation of the power of God many times, but had felt its influence upon their own bodies. What could we hope for in the future? While my child lived, I thought I understood my duty. I pressed my dear babe to my heart and rejoiced that at least for one winter I should be released from any great responsibility, for it could not be my duty to travel in winter with my infant. But when he was taken from me, I was again thrown into great perplexity. The condition of the cause and the state of God's people nearly crushed us. Our happiness has depended upon the state of the cause of God. When God's people are in a prospering condition, we feel free. But when they are in disorder and backslidden, nothing can make us joyful. Our whole interest in life has been interwoven with the rise and progress of the third angel's message. We are bound up in it, and when it does not prosper, we experience great suffering of mind. About this time, my husband, as he reviewed the past, began to lose confidence in almost everybody. Many of those he had tried to befriend had acted the part of enemies, and some that he had helped the most with his own scanty purse and his influence with others had been putting forth a perpetual effort to injure him and cast burdens upon him. One Sabbath morning, as he was going to our place of worship, an overpowering sense of such injustice came over him, and he turned aside to weep aloud while the congregation waited for him. From the commencement of our labors, we have been called to bear a plain, pointed testimony, to reprove wrongs and spare not. All the way there has been those who have stood in opposition to our testimony, and have followed after to speak smooth things, daub with untempered mortar, and destroy the influence of our labors. The Lord would rein us up to bear reproof, and then individuals have stepped right in between us and the people to make our testimony of none effect. Many visions have been given that we must occupy the position to stir up the people of God and not shun to declare His counsel, for the church was asleep in their sins, but few have sympathized with us, while many have sympathized with the wrong and with those who have been reproved. These things crush us, and we felt that we had no testimony to bear in the church. We knew not who to confide in. All these things forced themselves upon us, and hope died within us. We retired to rest about midnight, but I could not sleep. A severe pain was in my heart, and I could find no relief. I fainted a number of times. My husband sent for brethren C. Smith, Amadon, and Kellogg. Their fervent prayers were heard. Relief came, and I was taken off in vision. Then I was shown that we must still bear our testimony, straight and pointed, that we had a work to do. Then the individuals were presented before me who have shunned the pointed testimony. I saw the influence of their teachings upon God's people. I was shown the condition of the people in blank. They have the theory of truth, but are not sanctified through it. I saw that when the messengers enter a new place, their labor is worse than loss unless they bear a plain, pointed testimony. They should keep up the distinction between the Church of Jesus Christ and formal, dead professors. There was a failure in blank. Brother Blank was fearful of offending, fearful lest the peculiarities of our faith should appear, and the standard was lowered down to the people. The fact should have stood out living before the people that we possess truths of vital importance, and that their eternal interest depended upon the decision they would make. And in order to be sanctified through the truth, their idols must be given up, their sins be confessed, and they bring forth fruit meet for repentance. Those who engage in the solemn work of bearing the third angel's message should move out decidedly, and in the spirit and power of God fearlessly preach the truth and let it cut. They should elevate the standard of truth and urge the people to come up to it. It has been lowered down to meet the people in their condition of darkness and sin. It is the pointed testimony that will bring up the people to decide. A peaceful testimony will not do this. The people have the privilege of listening to this kind of teaching from the pulpits of the day. But God has servants to whom He has entrusted a solemn, fearful message to bring out and fit up a people for the coming of Christ. There is as great a difference in our faith and that of nominal professors, as the heavens are higher than the earth. The people are asleep in their sins and need to be alarmed before they can shake off this lethargy. Their ministers have preached smooth things. God's servants who bear sacred vital truths should cry aloud and spare not, that the truth may tear off the garment of security and find its way to the heart. The straight testimony that the people in blank should have had was walked all around, and the seed of truth was sown among thorns and has been choked by the thorns. God's servants must bear a pointed testimony. It will cut the natural heart and develop character. Brethren blank and blank moved with a perfect restraint upon them while in blank. Such preaching will never do the work that God designs to have accomplished. There is enough scringing and crippling and warping up pointed truths, which rebuke sin, by the ministers of the nominal churches. Unless souls embrace the message aright, and their hearts are prepared to receive it, they had better let it entirely alone. The rest of the chapter contains the statements and testimonies from various people in affirmation of the information that was presented in the book. I'll read a couple of them here. In view of the slanderous report circulated by a few individuals against Brother and Sister White, We feel called upon to testify that we have been personally acquainted with them and their course since 1844, and therefore know that any statements that would represent them as being in any wise connected with or countenancing in any degree those fanatical abominations into which some in Maine and elsewhere were drawn during the years 1844 to 1846 are wicked and malicious falsehoods. We have never known them to be in the least infected with the spirit or works of fanaticism, but on the contrary, as the untiring and unflinching opposers of the same. There is an extensive list of people's names attached to that. Portland, Maine, August 10, 1858. As unfavorable reports are in circulation against Elder James White and wife, it is a pleasure for us to testify that we have been personally acquainted with them since 1844. They have had no sympathy with the no-work theory, voluntary humility, spiritual second advent, and spiritual union not in accordance with the law of marriage, but ever raised their voices against these different forms of fanaticism, which prevailed with some in New England. Several names attached here. We bear cheerful testimony to the truthfulness of the statements relative to Elder Damon on pages 40 and 41. As near as we can recollect, we believe the circumstances of his arrest and trial to be fairly stated. Several names. Topsham, Maine, August 6, 1860. The wonderful manifestation of the power of God in healing Sister Frances Howland is correctly stated on pages 42 to 44, except the one who baptized her, Stockland Howland, and several other names. In our opinion, Sister White has given a fair statement of the fanaticism in Maine and her labors with the unfortunate victims of it in pages 49 to 65. Extensive list of names. We, the undersigned, know that Sister White's statement in regard to the sickness and recovery of Gilbert Collins on page 108 and 109 is correct. There's names. From personal knowledge, we can testify that the statements on pages 124 to 127 relative to a certain woman who came among us in Camden are correct. And names attached. As to what is stated on pages 133 to 134, we know these things to be facts which cannot be gainsaid. Several names. There are several more testimonies here, and they can be read in the script of the book.